اونو جنتیمان دوستیان زنان زنان سلکه تاکسوس ملتان زنیت از ما سویی به بینما سویی چیتانه من ویستم ستپیتون زنم ایتوله ایسایم بگدام هایم به بکتی ساکم بکتی من شکا پرچو بشتر پیپزن به بیویزا پتیتنم پامنه بپشن Yesterday, we had read Krishna's, the beginning of Krishna's answer to Arjuna about whether Arjuna should engage in Buddha Yoga, which he interpreted to mean. Just the renunciation of work. And being situated intellectually. Because in the end of the second chapter, there's a description of the sthita prajna, the one who was fixed in knowledge. And he was completely aloof. Oh, it's a baby. So the sthita prajna was in this world, physically perhaps, but his consciousness was so fixed on the absolute truth that he was completely unaffected by the world, completely unaffected by it, whether it was hot or cold, whether the modes of material nature were striking him in a happy or unhappy way. It was simply on a different platform of realization, not his body, and ultimately fixed in his relationship with Krishna. So that person was what Arjuna was perceiving as what Krishna told him to do as Buddhi Yoga. And he was thinking that, yes, this is a good idea, that I should practice Buddhi Yoga and be completely aloof from the material world, and I won't have to fight. But Krishna, on the other hand, was encouraging him and ordering him to fight in the battlefield. So Arjuna, at the beginning of chapter 3, asked about what he should do. Tell me one thing. He said, tell me... Tadekam vada nischitya. Tell me just one thing instead of two things that he was perceiving were opposed to each other, in opposition to each other. Tell me one thing. So Krishna replied in the first part of the third chapter that the two of jnana or sankhya, which is basically the same, complete renunciation of karma, and karma yoga, or the using one's actions so that they bring us closer to the Supreme, that these two are actually one in the sense that they have the same goal. And then Krishna described that it is dangerous to engage in jnana yoga or the mentally being situated in the absolute truth, or trying to be mentally situated in the absolute truth, and not engaging in any work unless one's consciousness is completely pure already. Otherwise, you become mityachar. So it's better, Krishna explains, even though the goal is the same, to engage your active organs, meaning the body, in works of either devotion or as karma yoga. Because in that way it is much safer, much better. Now, Krishna explains, and when he ends this section of basic instructions, of which is better, to renounce work, or to work, Krishna says clearly that to work is better. But, so that's how Krishna ends the section. And then he even says that you can't even maintain your body unless you work. Then he begins to describe, which was the letter of the section that we read yesterday, that ultimately one should engage in Nishkam Karma Yoga, which means that one should combine the best aspects of karma and jnana by working on the karma platform, but your consciousness is on the jnana platform in a detached way. So the detachment, the renunciation is internal, not external. It is not karma sannyas, but karma phal tyag, as in the words of the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Renunciation of the fruits of one's work, as opposed to renunciation of the work itself. So that's what Krishna is leading towards. But then how does one get to the point where one is completely detached from the fruit of one's work if one is attached to the fruit of one's work? So Krishna then describes what we read yesterday, the art of sacrifice, that you follow the prescribed Vedic system. And by following the system, even though you have attachment to the fruit of your work, you'll gradually become purified by offering the fruit of your work, at least partially, to the Supreme Lord. Now, one point that I wanted to add to what we spoke about yesterday, your question yesterday, was that what we do should be done under guidance. Not just saying, well, I'm going to do the best I can, and this is how I'm going to do it, and things like that. There should be guidance. Superior guidance, Shastra, Sadhu and Guru, that gives us directions how to perform our work in such a way that we become purified and less entangled with it. So anyway, Krishna described that system of sacrifice, and he describes, he ended that discussion in 16. Text 16 of the third chapter by saying, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifices thus established by the Vedas certainly lives a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. In other words, he doesn't gain the benefit of his human life. In that way, because attachment to the results of one's work comes from which mode of material nature? Passion. So one has to, and detachment is born of goodness. So one gradually should raise oneself from passion to goodness. That's part of the point. So now Krishna begins describing something different. And answering the question. So this is someone who's attached to the fruit of the work. How should he act? And he should act dutifully according to the proper system, the Vedic system for elevation. But then, if someone's detached from the fruit of his work, then what he should do? Should he still perform these Vedic sacrifices or perform his duties? Is he detached? So Krishna's actually going to explain this Nishkam Karma Yoga or Karma Yoga on the detached platform. In 17 he says, but for one who takes pleasure in the self, who understands who he is, that he's not his body, whose human life is one of self-realization, so he's already gone beyond the platform that was described in the last section, beyond the platform of attachment to the fruit. He's taking his pleasure not in the fruit of his work, which ultimately means misery, but he's gaining his pleasure in his relationship in who he is. So if one is just on the jnana platform, he's just seeing himself as a soul, as eternal, so that brings so much pleasure. But if one is a devotee, he's seeing himself more completely. He's getting pleasure in his self, means that he's getting pleasure in his self, which means that he's a servant of Krishna. That's who the self is. The self isn't only eternal, but self is eternally a servant. And who does the self ultimately serve? Gopi Bharta, Parakamalayo, and Dasa Dasana Das. The Supreme Lord Krishna, the servants of the Supreme Lord Krishna. So he says in 17, Krishna himself says, this Yas Tu Atmarati, the one who has Rati in the Atman, his pleasure in the self, Eva Syad, he certainly remains Atmatripta, self-illuminated, Cha Manava, a man who is like that. He's focused in himself, just like the Stita Pragya. Now what instruction is Krishna going to give to the Stita Pragya when he's describing Karma Yoga? So he said, such a person who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, means full, for him there is no duty. There is no reason to act. It's obvious why a person who attached, wants some fruit from his work, what his reasons for acting are, and that is to enjoy something. But why would a person who is Atmarati, getting Rati from the self, why would he act? He has no reason to act. So therefore there is no Tasya Karyam na Vidyate. So no duty for him exists. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. So what does he do then? He has no personal need. So will he act or not act? And the answer is, Krishna explains in 19, Tasmad Ashakta Satatam. Ashakta means without attachment. Satatam. Karyam Karma Samacharam. He should karya karma, he should do his duty, perform his duty, but Tasmad Ashakta Satatam. He should perform his duty, but without attachment. Ashakto he acharan karma param apnoti purusha. He should perform his duty unattached as he performs, as he works. And then param apnoti purusha. A person attains the supreme by working in this way. So Prabhupada's translation. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty in an unattached way. For by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. So one becomes elevated in this way. Now, is this possible to work without attachment to the results? And Krishna's going to give an example that follows the principle that was just stated. He says, kings such as Janaka attain perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work, because such a person is not motivated by any other, by a desire, selfish desire, because his pleasure doesn't come from the self. I mean, it comes from the self, but not in selfishness. So King such as Janaka did it. So that was an example that Krishna gave, and now in 21 he's going to explain the principle in a very simple and clear way in a very famous verse. Yad yara charati shrestas tadta devitaro jana sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anavartate. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by his exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So this is his motivation for acting. He should, for working, but to set an example. So who this is going to please? Krishna. This is going to please Krishna, setting an example to help others. So here's Prabhupada's purport. People in general always require a leader who can teach the public by practical behavior. A leader cannot teach the public to stop smoking if he himself smokes. Lord Chaitanya said that a teacher should behave properly before he begins teaching. One who teaches in that way is called an acharya, or the ideal teacher. Therefore, a teacher must follow the principles of Shastra, scripture, to teach the common man. The teacher cannot manufacture rules against the principles of revealed scriptures. The revealed scriptures, like Manusamhita and similar others, are considered the standard books to be followed by human society. Thus, the leader's teaching should be based on the principle of such standard Shastras. One who desires to improve himself must follow the standard rules as they are practiced by the great teachers. Srimad Bhagavatam also affirms that one should follow in the footsteps of great devotees. And that is the way of progress on the spirit, on the path of spiritual perfection, realization. So what is the way of progress on the path of spiritual realization? The king or the executive head of a state, the father, and the school teacher are all considered to be natural leaders of the innocent people in general. So in that sense, who are the natural leaders? Oh, and who are the people in general? But they have to set a good example. And also the father too. And the executive head of state. What's the executive head of the state of Australia? Who is he? Who is he? You haven't done your research on this, did you say? Okay. Do you know who the executive head of this, of the country called Kenya is?
No.
Okay. Never mind. But all such natural leaders have a great responsibility to their dependents. Therefore, they must be conversant with standard books of moral and spiritual codes. So that's Prabhupada's purport to the Adyada Charity Srishtas. O son of Prita, there is no work prescribed for me within the three planetary systems. In other words, Krishna doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have to do anything. Who's going to say that Krishna, you have to do this? Because he's the supreme. No, I'm kidding. He is swatantra. He is completely independent. Nor am I in want of anything. He is the absolute truth, and everything is his. Nor have I any need to obtain anything. So such a person who is the controller, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, of all in existence in the material world, and doesn't want anything, and he doesn't need to get anything, should such a person work and do duties? And the answer is, Krishna says, and yet, despite that being my position, I am engaged in prescribed duties. So there's one chapter of the 10th canto, which is the 70th chapter, if I remember correctly, just after Narada Muni visits Dwarka. Narada Muni visits because he wants to, he used to spend so much time in Dwarka. Why?
Because Krishna was there.
Yes. And when he first went, and he wanted to see something very amazing, because he had heard that Krishna married 16,100, at this time it was 16,100 princesses at the same time, but in different places. And it wasn't computer virtual networking marriages either. All the queens were there, and Krishna was like this, operating the, he was the administrator. It wasn't like that at all, but rather Krishna was in each of the different places with each of the different 16,108 wives, all at the same time. Now this is How would you describe that in one word?
Extraordinary.
Extraordinary. Another word. Certainly extraordinary. That means beyond the ordinary. What's another word that would describe what Chris and I have done?
Unimaginable.
Unimaginable. Yes. In different places, all at the same time, doing different things. What's another word?
Beyond conception.
Yeah. Inconceivable, impossible materially from the material level. Can you be in more than one place at the same time? Well, how do you know?
Unlimited.
That's true. How do you know? Well, anyway, if you don't know, we know. Except when you're painting, then you're unlimited. I've heard. Especially, yeah. So Narada Muni wanted to see this, how Krishna had done something so inconceivable and extraordinary and wonderful. So he went there, and the 69th chapter describes his experience seeing Krishna. He was so overwhelmed by the happiness of seeing Krishna do all this wondrous activities. And then the next chapter, the 70th chapter, is entitled Krishna's Daily Activities. Is that right, Chaitanya? What is the 70th chapter?
Krishna book?
Huh? Krishna book? Yeah.
No, I don't know.
What?
It's not
that,
when he goes and visits
all the... So Krishna, daily activities, and it shows that he did everything religious, completely in a religious, shastric way, as befitting a king. Even though there was no reason to do it. There was no external reason, and there was no internal reason. Internal meaning he didn't want anything or desire anything, because he has something called sarva-sankalpa shakti or icha shakti, that whatever he desires is immediately there. He doesn't have to do anything. And even his shaktis anticipate his desires. And even before he desires it, they know what he's going to desire and give it to him. So he has no need to do any work, but yet he was working. And Krishna said, I am also engaged in prescribed duties for the reason. For if I ever failed to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, O Partha, certainly all men would follow my path. So therefore, when Krishna went to school, he was such a good example. Otherwise, other people, when they would go to school, they would say, oh, Krishna doesn't study here for his exams and doesn't care if he does well. And I don't need to. But Krishna is extraordinary in everything he did, and set such a good example. And then he says, if I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all living beings. Because Arjuna, in the first chapter, he of the Bhagavad Gita, said, if I fight, I will destroy the family, and the women would become polluted, and I would be the cause of creating vanasankara, or unwanted children. And Krishna is defeating that argument here by explaining that it's the doing, if one doesn't do one's duty, one sets a bad example, and that is the cause. Arjuna was saying fighting would be the cause of unwanted progeny, but Krishna turns it around and says not fighting will be the cause. And then his purport proper quotes from the 10th canto, the 33rd chapter, which is Rasa Lila. Krishna 31, 32, the Rasa Lila chapter. It says, one should simply follow the instructions of the Lord and his empowered servants. Their instructions are all good for us, and any intelligent person will perform them as instructed. However, one should guard against trying to imitate their activities. One should not try to drink the ocean of poison in imitation of Lord Krishna, because although Krishna set such a good example, he also showed himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead as able to do things that no one else could do by dancing with the wives of others in the middle of the night. He danced with the Raja Gopis in the middle of the night. But no one can really follow his example because he divided himself up into so many Krishnas when he did this. Each Gopi had a Krishna. Well, Krishna was in between the two Gopis. As the ignorant Krishna continues with his instruction that Arjuna should fight, but not in an attached way, but in a detached way, by saying, as the ignorant perform their duties with attachment to results, the learned may similarly act, but without attachment, for the sake of leading people on the right path. So, without attachment, kuryat vidvam tata saktis, that one should, the vidvan, the learned person, should, must do without attachment. Why? Shakirshu loka sangraham, to lead the people in general. So as not to disrupt the minds of the ignorant men attached to fruitive results of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working in the spirit of devotion, he should engage them in all sorts of activities for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. So he should work in the spirit of devotion and help others, or at least setting a good example in this way. By his example and his words, people should be induced to work with devotion. What does it mean to work with devotion? It means detached from the motive to selfishly enjoy the fruits of one's work and attached to working in such a way and that Krishna will be pleased, and using the fruit or the results of one's work for Krishna's pleasure. Prabhupada explains in his purport, this is, we'll read the whole purport, but just a section of Prabhupada's purport, 326. A self-realized soul in Krishna consciousness should not disturb others in their activities or understanding, but he should act by showing how the results of all work can be dedicated to the service of Krishna. The learned Krishna conscious person may act in such a way that the ignorant person working for sense gratification may learn how to act and how to behave. So the two are going to be working, the ignorant and the self-realized soul, a soul in Krishna consciousness, a realized soul in Krishna consciousness, they should be working. So one will be working to set a good example, working with devotion in order to please Krishna, and the other one will be tending to work with sense gratification, but he's learning how to work with devotion. So there will be a difference in consciousness, but the outside work will be the same. Now, what will be the difference between a person working in a lower level consciousness and a person working in a higher level consciousness? The next verse will describe that. So the question we're asking, what is going to be the difference? How are they thinking? So I'll read the verse, and then you can tell me how they are thinking, how the difference in thinking. Prakriti priyamanani kunai kamani sarvasya ahankara vamudatma kartaham iti manyate. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are actually carried out by the three modes of material nature. And Prabhupada's purport, which really answers the question. Two persons one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body, the mechanisms of the body, is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is a symptom of his nescience. What does nescience mean?
Ignorance.
Ignorance. So what is the symptom of his ignorance? What is it? What does Prabhupada say? He's doing everything by his own power. I'm making it all happen. And that is ahankara vamudatma, bewildered by false ego. He's thinking ahankara, I am the doer. It's me who's doing it. And what doesn't he understand? That his body itself and his abilities, everything are under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's no question of him independently doing anything, because there's no question of being independent, because we're completely dependent. In what way are we completely dependent? Who can think of a way we're completely dependent?
Give us the energy to be able to do the work anyway.
Yeah.
Right. We're not even an independent operator of our own body.
Yeah. Like, just imagine if you had to stay alive, you have to make your heart has to beat, right? So what would happen if you had to be conscious of that? And what would happen if you forgot? Like sometimes we forget something. You sometimes forget your books at home and things like that. Sometimes. So we forget. So what would happen if you forgot to make your heart beat? You'd be finished so quickly. Or you forgot to breathe. And then you forget to digest your food, breathe, and keep your heart working. And blink your eyes too, otherwise your eyes won't work. And move your tongue as you're talking to make different sounds. Just imagine if you had to do that consciously. It's all practically all my Krishna's grace, it all goes on. And when you're walking somewhere, you don't have to think. Put your right foot in front of and put it on the ground and move and bend your knee a little bit and pick it up. And then take the left foot and put it in front, and then shift your balance from your right leg to your left leg. Just imagine if you had to do all these things. And if you got it wrong sometime you had to keep your heart beating also while thinking about that, and then breathing and blinking your eyes and your blood circulating. Oh, it'd be really hard to do anything in this world, wouldn't it? So this is all going on by the potency of the modes of material nature. And we're in this machine called the material body. And practically speaking, as we have just noted, it's working automatically. You know, we have a little part, like we can say, right arm go up in the air. And it goes up. That's amazing, isn't it? Oh, the left hand went up and I didn't even ask it to. Now right hand go down. You can do things like that, but how it works, you're not even conscious. You say, arm raise, arm go down. But there's so many muscles attached. If you pull off the skin, and we don't recommend anyone try this, but there's so many muscles in your back and your arms and your shoulders and things like that. It just works in such an amazing way. And we're sitting in it, making believe we're doing everything. So this is bewildered by false ego, and false ego specifically, the Krishna's energy known as ahankar, or false ego, it specifically makes us think that we are doing everything. Well, obviously, if we think about it, we are not doing everything. We're doing our little part, and this is described in the 18th chapter, that we and our desire are one of the factors in acting, but we are not doing everything. We're doing just a little bit.
Rajan, can you explain the Chanpana Pursa where we're forced to act according to nature? How that fits in?
Right. Where you saying where it is? Where asking where it is?
It's in this chapter. I was seeing it a minute ago.
Well, when you see it again, let us know. But Krishna, sure, it's not in the second chapter. Maybe it's in the in the beginning. It's in the first 8 verses or something. That Krishna says you have to act. Maybe it's there.
Into nature,
we're forced to act. Mm. So, continuing Prabhupada's purport, he does. So, a person of false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is a symptom of his nescience, his ignorance. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Now, I've heard people say, well, yes, God gave me these things for me to enjoy, so therefore my service to him is to enjoy. And this is actually, it's a very contemporary philosophy. It's amazing. This one comes out. There's very half the New Age people. This is their fatty way to answer that we are part of the Supreme, and that the way that the Supreme or the Source, what do they call it, the higher power? That's what they call it, the higher power or the Source. Do you ever hear them? People use those terms, the higher power, the Source. You ever hear that?
12-step programs.
Yeah, that's what they call it, the higher power from there. Source energy. So they think that we're all part, and that's true. We're all part of the source energy, the higher power, and the way that the source energy enjoys is by us enjoying. Good, huh? I've been always waiting for someone to tell me that one. That way I can be religious and my service to God is by my sense enjoyment. It's perfect. So because it's natural, if everything is going on by God's grace, that things should be used for Him. What is it called if someone is doing something by the grace of another, but isn't thankful in return anything? Krishna's already said that in relationship to the demigods. Stana Eva, you're a thief even, but very ungrateful. So if Krishna is giving us the ability to do so many things, and people could deny it's Krishna, but no one can really honestly say that it's all going on by my power. That's ridiculous. So he does not, goes by under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Rishikesh, or the Rishika Isha, the master of the senses of the material body. For due to his long misuse of the senses and sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. So this, the Bhagavad Gita, is trying to correct that ignorance, the falsity of our position, that we've forgotten our eternal relationship with Krishna. Not broken our eternal relationship, but we've turned our back on it. Krishna, bhule se jeev, forgetting Krishna. Anadiya vahimu, we turn our back to Krishna. So bewildered by false ego, we forget our eternal relationship with Krishna. One who is in knowledge, this is 28. We'll read up to 30. One who is in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, O Mighty Aunt, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the difference between work and devotion and work for fruitive results. Tattvavit, one who is in knowledge of Tattva. Mahabaho, O Mighty Aunt, Guna Karma Vabhagasa. Who understands the difference, Vibhag. The differences between sense gratification. So he knows the difference between detached work, work in devotion, and work for sense gratification. One who knows the truth. And bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached, but the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. So why? This is actually quite mysterious. So the person's in ignorance, and they're doing things that in an improper way, they're being attached, but yet Krishna's saying a wise person shouldn't unsettle them. Why? And the answer is, as we know, that if they stop working, if you tell them your work is foolish and you're gaining nothing by your work, and if they stop working, they'll get in even more trouble. They'll go into ignorance because their attached work is in the mode of passion. So if they would become elevated to the mode of goodness and be able to work and be detached from their work, the one on the goodness level is working and being detached from the work, and of course ultimately offering the fruit to Krishna. On the passion level, it's working and being attached to the fruit of one's work, and the ignorant level is not working at all. And the result of ignorance is more ignorance, more dangerous for the person. So therefore the wise person should not unsettle them. Therefore, Arjuna, so here's Krishna's order. This is the bhakti, niskam. Surrendering all your works unto me. Now, what does this mean for Arjuna on the battlefield? Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me with full knowledge of me, without desire for profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. Because why is free from lethargy mentioned? Because because what usually motivates us to work? Desire for profit and thinking it's mine. So if we have no desire to gain anything from the work and we don't think it's mine, then we get lazy about it. And lazy is lethargy. So Krishna says also, so free from lethargy, even though you're not desiring to profit, and even though you're not claiming proprietorship, you should still fight, because mai sarvani karmani, you should give me, unto me, you should give all your work. With full knowledge, sannyas adhyatma chetasa, with full knowledge of the self. So partial knowledge of the self is that or no knowledge of the self is on the body, or a little more advanced, no knowledge is on my mind, and no knowledge, and some knowledge of the self is on eternal, and complete knowledge or full knowledge of the self is that I'm eternally Krishna's servant. So in that mood, in full knowledge of the self, and giving up completely all the sense of proprietorship and attachment, then one should fight free from all lethargy. So we'll just read the first half of Prabhupada's purport here and then we'll stop. This verse clearly indicates the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. It's text 30 of the third chapter. Surrendering all your work unto me with full knowledge of me, without desire for profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy fight. So I was saying that with full knowledge was referring to the jiva, but it's full knowledge of Krishna, which is complete knowledge, which also includes knowledge of his own relationship to Krishna. This verse clearly indicates the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord instructs that one has to become fully Krishna conscious to discharge duties as if in military discipline. Such an injunction may make things a little difficult. Nevertheless, duties must be carried out with dependence on Krishna, because that is the constitutional position of the living entity. The living entity cannot be happy independent of the cooperation of the Supreme Lord, because the eternal constitutional position of the living entity is to become subordinate to the desires of the Lord. Arjuna was therefore ordered by Sri Krishna to fight as if the Lord were his military commander. One has to sacrifice everything for the goodwill of the Supreme Lord, and at the same time discharge prescribed duties without claiming proprietorship. Arjuna did not have to consider the order of the Lord, he had only to execute his order. What do you think of that? What do you think? Fantastic to think about it. Difficult to do it. Excuse me. Yeah? Whatever Krishna wants, anything for the pleasure of Krishna, the perfection of this is the residence of Vrindavan. So that's only considered the pleasure of Krishna. So it was for them, because of their raga, their attachment to Krishna, it was completely spontaneous and natural. Completely spontaneous and completely natural. It wasn't a question of military discipline. It was a matter of completely spontaneously and naturally wanting to do everything for Krishna, everything for Krishna. Mother Yasoda was willing to die 1,000 times to save Krishna from one drop of perspiration that she thought would cause him difficulty. And when Krishna was outside of her presence, she would cry like a calf, like a mother cow separated from her calf. So this is so extraordinary. Any questions or comments? Where?
3-5.
Yeah. You going to read it?
Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment.
That's, we can make a scientific experiment. And for 5 seconds, everyone should not do anything. Can you not do anything? Or you can, because you'd have to stop from doing anything, and therefore you'd be stopping. If you start scratching or moving, everyone blinking, doing this, going like this, because it's the nature of the soul. And according to the modes of material nature, that control us. We do one thing or another. Inactivity isn't a question, an alternative. So I have to work in such a way that our work elevates us, not degrades us. That's the question.
Can you explain one thing to, like, devotees? We're not supposed to work for sense gratification, but, you know, like, say with prasadam and things like that, we do enjoy, don't we? We're allowed to enjoy. We're not supposed to be.
Depends who's cooking.
So, what is our attitude then? Our attitude
about prasadam?
Yes.
Well, you know, Sayanamita Pao. What's the difference? Kao means eat, and Pao means honoring. More like that. So that's ideal. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to take Lord Jagannath Mahaprasadam, when you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he would enjoy on a level that's completely incomprehensible, because he would honor it and taste Krishna's presence. He would perceive Krishna's presence directly in the Mahaprasad. So yes, it's the spirit soul's nature to enjoy, but his enjoyment, he's the predominated enjoyer. And we are acting as if we are the predominating enjoyer, which is Krishna's position, and that's the problem. So we can enjoy as a predominated living entity. Prasanna? No, but ultimately it should be thinking, oh, Krishna has tasted this. Grateful, yeah, grateful is nice.
It's not sense gratification. It is, but it's dovetailed.
This is the proper use of the tongue for eating. Sense gratification is the artificial use. Or you could say it's spiritual sense gratification. But we're not impersonalists. We're not practicing jnana. Where we renounce all activities, but we, by acting properly with them, we naturally will enjoy. That's the idea. But that enjoyment, which is in a natural way, isn't sense gratification.
Isn't
in the sense that it's meant when we say we shouldn't engage in sense gratification, which you never hear anyone saying nowadays. But that's not what we mean. We mean it independently from Krishna service.
Okay, so if you've got sense a misunderstanding, then you have to override it with your intelligence.
Well, yeah. Should understand that the way I'm thinking is just the product of my misunderstanding. That comes from intelligence. Intelligence, like you said. Okay, let's stop. Yes.
Just now you explained that we are not the doer, that's what Krishna says. And so all the actions actually is through Krishna. And
through the modes of material nation.
Through our modes of material nation. My question is, let's say if you want to do something for spiritual activity, you want to do this or you want to do any, let's say I want to cook something. So the mood I should be is that I should cook for the pleasure of Krishna, is it? I mean, to check on myself whether I have the right.
Krishna has given me an ability to cook. And let me use that ability, offer it back to Krishna. it's his gift to me, how to make the most wonderful cakes. So let me offer to him what he's given me already. So the example that's given is that you see people in the Yamuna or the Ganga, they go like this. They're in the water and they go like this. They're offering the Ganga or the Yamuna, what that which is already belongs to the Ganga and the Yamuna. But what can we do? Everything belongs to Krishna, everything comes from Krishna, so we can't offer anything outside of Krishna to Krishna. So he's given us some ability and we should offer that back to him for his pleasure. So whatever Krishna gives us, we should use to please him. And what the false ego wants us, then makes us want to do is, whatever Krishna gives me, I should use it for my pleasure. So we use it for Krishna's pleasure, and the offering is complete. Is that clear?
Yeah. And the one more, that's part of it, and the other part, how do we check that we do not fall trap to Maya, you know, thinking that there's a tendency that to think that I'm actually the doer, you know, and then you know, I want to do this, I want to do that, you know, that's the that's one of
say
my
I thoughts. Want to do this for Krishna, so that's even so that's better than I want to do it for me.
Yeah.
But then the question is what is pleasing to Krishna? So if I want to do it for Krishna and my attachment is to the work, that's not quite bhakti. But when the surrender begins is with the work and also the fruit, that's bhakti according to Śrīla Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura. So you offer the work too. Let me do something that is going to be pleasing for Krishna. Will be pleasing to him. So therefore, so your question is, how can you check your own consciousness? That was sort of it. Well, you do things under the order of Sadhu Shastra Guru.
Well, sometimes it's a fine line that sometimes I feel like there's a very fine line that we can get caught in the false ego and.
But you can also get caught thinking about it too much too. Like, just imagine Arjuna on the battlefield and someone's shooting arrows at him, and he starts thinking, is my defending against these arrows born of false ego, or is it born of my desire to please Krishna? And he's thinking about it, and he'll have 2,000 arrows inside of him by the time he figures out that he's supposed to stop the arrows.
What should we do?
Mam anusmara yudhyacha means think of Krishna and do our duty and fight whatever our duty is.
So don't worry too much.
Don't worry too much. Worry a little bit, it's okay. But the result of the worrying should be to think about Krishna. So how to think about Krishna? There's so many ways. By chanting, by thinking, who am I doing this to please? Guru, Krishna, like that. Who is asking me to do this? So many thoughts like that. But when Arjuna was on the battlefield, he didn't have so much time to think. Krishna told him to fight, and he had to fight, and then he had to do his duty. But yet, mam anusmara yudhyacha. Think of me, Krishna said, and fight. Because we can also get lost on the mental platform. How do you know? How do you really know? How do you know that you know? You can just go on and on like that.
Sometimes I do a bit of like introspective and difficult to really, to have a clear answer.
Because you're asking yourself? A fish cannot see the water around him. A bird cannot see the air. And a man cannot see himself. So you have to ask gurus, sadhus, or any way to improve and those kind of things.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How can you tell, like, let's say I did something wrong or right, I don't know, whether it's right.
Give me an example.
Okay, I had an experience where there's a man who came home distributing Bibles today morning. So I gave him the Bhagavad Gita. And he gave me this Bible.
Yeah.
So then I didn't know if I did a wrong or a right thing, but I was feeling convinced that I did something right.
Yes.
But I don't know if it was my mind playing on me or it was actually right.
And what did your brother say when you asked him?
What did he say?
Well, I had my argument that you shouldn't. I mean, my point was that Bhagavad Gita should be the end, or at least until you're strong enough, you should read Bhagavad Gita and at least read it once, at least. I mean, it's not read once,
yeah.
Even. Read it once before reading anything else.
One time, one devotee, Vaisheshika, told me that he was distributing books somewhere, and this Muslim gave him a book. Quran. He was distributing books, but a Muslim gave him a book, and he gave him a Bhagavad Gita, like this, and he took the Quran. And then we walked out the door, and there was another Muslim, and he said, "Why don't you take this Bhagavad Gita?" And he said, "No, I'm a Muslim. I only read Muslim books." So he sold him the Quran.
That's funny.
That's a real book distributor one, isn't it?
Krishna is in Sanskrit.
You try your best. So you try your best, and it may not be perfect. So your brother brought something to your attention. I don't know if you were planning on reading the Bible or whatever, and you don't know if the Christian fellow was intent on reading the Bhagavad Gita. But in any case, you tried your best, and then be detached. And then your brother explains something to you, and then you consider that for next time. That point that he's making. You try your best and let it go. What do you think, Sri Bhattarajan?
Dave, what happened to me before the class?
Yeah.
A little more detail about the exchange
that
I had with the person. And one point was that the man got benefit by the fact that you accepted his gift.
Yeah.
Even though we might not have an interest to read it, but we accept that.
Yeah.
And he's benefited by
yeah.
his offering.
Yeah, Prabhupada even said that it was just a little bit different, but even just by looking at the book or even touching it, you're benefited.
I made the point that in this sort of circumstance, you have to have some discrimination if the person is sincerely inquiring and interested, or if he has a vested motive or an intention in appearing interested and friendly. Because otherwise, if you give the Gita, he may do something offensive with it.
Mm.
So it does require some, before we hand over that book and before we, you know, open and come open and exchange with someone on another faith, we have to have
mm.
the conviction and the discrimination that the person is sincere in his part of the exchange. And if he is, then we can accept this gift. We're also giving, and he's giving to exchange. And then the question was also what to do with the book because one of Krishna's concerns was, you have the book there, you may become more interested in the book. If you're just a young devotee trying to find your way, you may become more interested in the content of the book.
That was your point, that you shouldn't read the Bhagavad Gita before.
Krishna's concern on this point.
Well, I mean, that's what my main concern was. I gave the book by Bhagavad Gita, fine, but taking the Bible, sometimes it's sitting there, and then sometimes you might think of what's in there, and start reading it, and get into that, because...
So you said if you're going to read other books, you first should at least know your own book, which is your point.
Yeah. Like that's what I was saying, that probably that should be your aim right now, especially as a neophyte. And once you're advanced and you learn it, then you can, once you know the base, once you have base strong,
then you have something to compare it by.
Yeah.
What do you think of that point? Yeah, it's a pretty good point. So did you listen to your brother? Did you listen to your brother on this?
Yeah.
When I did the exchange and all this, I was feeling that I'm right, but I don't know how I can know that if I'm actually right or it's actually mine or my mind.
Maybe you don't know at the time, but there's certain circumstances you'd know. If you've been given specific instructions by those who are concerned for you and things like that, teachers and things like that, so they give you specific instructions, so you guide your actions based on the specific instructions of those who are more experienced and learned and wise than you. But sometimes we're in a situation where we don't know what to do. So, what I think is a good idea is you use your intelligence as best you can, and then you pray to Krishna and say, this is the best I can do right now, and if you don't think it's what I should do, just please adjust me. I'm more attached to pleasing you than to doing what I think. And then you have to do something. And then be ready to stand corrected and learn. Because you can't know everything, every circumstance, especially when you're young. And sometimes, unfortunately, we learn by our mistakes also. And then sometimes we touch the fire and we get burnt. And it hurts so much that we think, I will never do that again. So sometimes we have to learn that way. It's not the best way to learn, because we become covered with burns and scars if that's the only way we know how to learn. But sometimes we learn in that way. At least sometimes I learn in that way. You're such a nice devotee, you can learn everything just by hearing about it even once. Good night. Hare Krishna.